Yeah, welcome, honourable members, committee secretary, do you have any apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members, colleagues and guests. Two apologies from Mr. Kwankwa and Ms. Lihale. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Joseph.
Morning, Chair. Honourable Saropen is on his way.
Thank you. My apologies get held up in another meeting. The problem with the chair is that when it's late, everybody can see. They can't hide. My apologies. Honourable members, we have reports of draft reports for the 2019 medium-term budget policy statement, the 2019 adjustment appropriation bill. We'll start with the draft report on the 2019 medium-term budget policy statement. Remember that these documents were circulated to us. But yeah, that's fine. Let's start with the end. Just go page by page, giving honorable members a second bite, so that you can see how far we go. On page one, I always ask Darren and the team to always double check, especially when it comes to numbers, because a zero makes a big difference, right? Three zeros even a bigger difference. So on page two, page three, page four, page five. Can you give Honorable Linda name documents? Thank you. On page five, the MTBS on page five, waiting for you. Okay, on page six, seven, eight. It's like meeting what we've always been discussing
yeah.
here, right? Nine, 10, yes, honourable officers.
I'm sorry to listen to you, sir.
No problem.
But I thought under learning and culture,
page
6 and 7.
Page 6 and 7.
Under the function group learning and culture, I think the committee should have somewhere, I don't know, in that part, something with regard to ECD. I know that you say early grade reading and mathematics, but you don't talk about early childhood development. And it is, I thought it is within this.
Okay.
Remember the president announced the move of ECD from social development to basic education. So I thought that, I don't know, but Islumu Siyabale Kamanji. Kaloko is umakulu then, something said.
Okay, before that, Honorable Peters, you remember that that's the recording of the meetings as to how we've been doing in the report. We are not making any recommendation even here.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So go away with eyes, there's just the recorded of what transpired and so on.
Okay.
Right. Just hold on, perhaps that may be relevant when it comes to recommendations. Honorable Joseph.
Thank you, Chair. Now, under that section, social development, I do see the second sentence as high allocations to early childhood development grants in the provinces. That's on page 7. Second sentence on social development. It is covered there.
Okay, that's fine. So it is recorded. It was raised in this. In this. Okay, thank you. On the NTVBS, that's how it's raised. Okay.
Go for each one by one so that you either you agree to it, because this is what we propose as support staff. But this is where you, as honorable members, must talk to this report on the findings and the recommendations. So I will suggest, and I know your approach, but I will suggest that we go one by one, so that if the committee agrees, we take that thing, because that's where the thrust of the report is.
That's proper. Let's do that. Committee position and findings, right? 7.2. Something on 7.4. Regime, we are dealing with the infrastructure fund, right? As government trying to boost the economy. But the private sector investments are just flat. They're just flat. So I think let's also be very sort of that let's also be concerned about the private sector investments. And they are, we need to do that. I think again let's also call on the private sector here. That they should stop this thing of seeing the workers as the first area of dealing with their cause of retrenchment. There's economics behind it. For instance, if you retrench somebody, it means tomorrow's government you have got no tax base. You are making our tax base thing, right? But also what we are dealing with the buying power, disposable income of people, we are also decreasing that, which is also very important for economic growth. So I think when we say let's also be very blunt on that one. Then let's be concerned about the trigger heavy private sector when it comes to the retrenchments. I think we must note that they're very quick in retrenching, and this we are arguing that this thing is having a negative impact on economic growth. Whoever will be debating that, we can talk about the transmission mechanism as to exactly what are we saying. But you've just said that one of the things we are dealing with our tax base. If you deal with our tax base again, we are increasing your debt deficit,
yeah.
and by so doing, you are also increasing your debt. You are saying we must go and borrow. So I think this committee, with a lot of people who are coming from the trade union movement, I think we should be very strong on that one. Is it not so, Honourable Joseph?
I can't disagree with the chair.
You can't disagree with me. I'm not like, sorry, if I may share this with you, just let me a little bit of a detour. A comrade by the name of Harry Kwana, he would say to us that there are many reasons why people join this strike. And he first up by saying, for instance, you don't know anything about exploitation, you're a student. So I'll talk with you, you know what exploitation is. You can talk about Bantu education and so on. So I don't want to get very much on workers' issue because for that very same reason. But I think let's be very robust on that one. It's an economic rationale,
yeah.
And I think we can defend it. Makakul.
I suggest that we put that as a part of the recommendations on, we will add on the recommendations to say, as much as we encourage National Treasury to look at the public sector which bill, we are also like encouraging them to, on the issues that you're talking about, we can put that as a recommendation.
But don't add the two, let those 2 points be separate. Let not one depend on the other. When it comes again, let's when we are noting the ease with which workers are being retrenched, you will note with concern that part, right? And
yeah.
Then we then go somewhere where we recommend that it shouldn't just be easy to retrench workers. People should look at other costs. We have got executives who are getting very huge bonuses and salaries, and but you never hear anything about them doing anything.
Okay.
Honourable Joseph.
Thank you, Chair. On the recommendations 8.2, there is.
We are still on 34.
Yeah, but I'm just saying now the point that we discussed now on the public rights.
Yeah.
There is a point in 8.2 about the National Treasury to conduct a comprehensive study on the public sector wage bill at all levels of government, including state-owned entities. So there is a general point with reference to your earlier point, Chair. Whilst we accept what you were saying, the principle of the matter is that we can't avoid talking about it. How we can't find a resolution in government, I mean, it's probably a debate in itself. But it is a point that is already is covered in the recommendations. I'm not sure what needs to be added to that as proposed now by our colleague there.
Honourable Kais.
Yeah, thank you, Honourable Chair. I just want to check this one first before we go deeper into that one that Honourable Joseph is raising, because there's one thing that I still remember that there was a matter which was referred to a public sector coordinating bargaining council called the Public Service Wage Commission. I don't know where this thing has slipped off the hands of the government. That should assist in this process of determining what is called the wage bill and the rest. Is it associated to what we are talking about? Why don't you first look at that something? How does it relate to what has been proposed now, so that we don't talk on something already that is there but nobody is taking care of it? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Peters.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think added to the point that you are raising about and supported by Honourable Joseph with regard to what the report says on the wage bill, I think we should, as a committee, also call on the department or the Ministry of Labour and Employment to, I don't know whether it is to conduct a study or to do work, whatever, with regard to the issue that you are raising, that every time there's a discussion on wage bill, the labor, there is, I'm just wondering, there is a of which, or the way in which the labor is treated in relation to dealing with, is it, in fact, there has been a joke that shows that some of the strategists sitting there, and there's Dave digging the trench, and they're talking about reducing the workforce, but David must go, and everybody else is not the one that is doing the work. And I'm trying to say to you, that point that you are raising is equally important, that we call on the Department of Employment and Labor. Because if we keep on reducing the workforce, it has a bearing on what they are supposed to be doing. And they need to be able to tell us what is it that can be done to protect the workers.
Honourable Peters, we are talking about the public sector workers.
Not only public sector.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you are talking about public sector.
No, remember I was talking about the private sector, where I was saying the ease with which they are doing it. But no, I think you're having a point. I just want to I want to come back to the public sector wage bill. I would say, have you modeled the impact of that in the whole economy of reducing the of wage bill reduction, right? What's going to be the impact of it? Because if it's through retrenchments and so on, do you understand exactly what the impact will be? Because the impact is not just on a Buthelezi who's going to be retrenched. There are 10 other people who are going to be retrenched.
Yeah.
There are all these things, people who may not be able to do certain things and so on. There's also the disposable income part of it. There's also the SARS, the revenue part of it and so on.
Yeah.
Or we just want to solve this one. Okay, we're solving this one. Are we really solving? Do we understand what the impact is going to be?
The overall impact.
The overall impact. So were you saying that let's give that to Department of Labor and Employment?
Yes, Chairperson. I think the Department of Labor and Employment.
Once again, on the breaking news.
The impact of I mean, the Department of Labor and Employment has got the responsibility equally to protect the workforce that is presently, is it private sector or public sector? They need to do that, but also to create the environment where
and new entrants can also feel job security. I don't know how to coin it, but the essence is there is a need for this department, together with National Treasury, to do a study on the ease of which everybody, even including in the private sector, when the economic hardships put pressure, it's very easy to just go for the laborers and the other blue collar workers.
Do you understand the drift of what we are trying to say around this issue? Again, Nico and the business how do we deal with it? Honorable Joseph?
Chair, thank you for the second opportunity, and I hear what the discussion is about the private sector. My first point on a wage bill was the government sector, you know, the public sector, the government workers, staff and workers. But the difference that I want to make, and we were worried about people being retrenched and the reduction of staff. If we look at the wage bill, I think the public sector, public service commission, or administration, public service administration, that area that takes care of the public service workers, should be consulted or have a workshop with role players, National Treasury and so on, and the Labour Department. Because the issue that I'm referring to is it's not the reduction of staff or the retrenchment of staff. If we have listened to many stakeholders who have come to this committee in this last few weeks, we can hear even Kosatu saying the other day, and I'm talking about trimming on the fat, and that's the point I was saying, that if you, for the business and for the government, in the good times, you can give as much as you want to, but in the bad times, you can't. And if it's the private sector, they will just close shop, which we also don't want. But within government itself, including ourselves, if we look at the amount of fat that can be trimmed that was added in the good years, in the good times of the economy, of this government's economy, that was there. And if you look at, for example, you get someone who gets a salary and a 13th paycheck and all the basics. But if you see what has been added over the years, also with the state-owned entities, that is the areas where we have to speak into collectively without discussing retrenchment or reduction of staff. That's the point I want to make. And for that, we need a joint concerted effort, because there is a lot of money that we can look at how we as a committee can influence a contribution on the reduction of the wage bill, but with reference to the benefits that we get, that we need to review. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable
Lethan. Thanks, Chair. I was trying, listening to pull all these things together without losing, the content of your original question. Because here, the original question, Chair, from yourself is about focusing on normalizing or reducing the debt-GDP ratio without only focusing only on one aspect of this. I was reading, Chair, listening to what honorable members were inputting on these three bullets, 7.4, 7.5, and 7.6. There's correlation there, Chair, and the sequence is very smart. Particularly, your 7.6 would now begin to talk about the shrinking economic growth. So what it means then, Chair, is that another bullet below that could begin to talk on what you are saying. Specific focus, and also, Chair, avoid this question of being inward-looking when we're talking, addressing this issue only to government. I don't want to preempt what I will be talking tomorrow on my debate, but then I think what government should be doing
should be making the way easy for business.
Yes.
Make comrade finance minister make it easy for business.
Without just if I may, how we usually capture that, right? The responsibility of government to create a conducive climate for private sector investment. And that's why we are raising these things for sense, the spectrum and all these things, the visa and so on. We're then saying, as government, we're moving, we've moved. Private sector can't wait and say, until we have done everything, then we'll come to the party. So, but I just wanted to summarize, creating a conducive environment and making easy for business to do business and invest. And there are things that we are pointing out that government is already doing. We're then saying private sector also come in, because we don't see private sector money, right? For instance, in the next MTF, about 860 billion is going to spend on infrastructure, right? What government is trying to do there with that is that you also use that to crowd in private sector investment so that we can all make contribute towards economic growth and job creation opportunities. I was talking about creating a conducive environment. I think that's what you, but you may continue on around
there. Yeah, thanks, Chef. That's exactly what I was saying. That would be, that's why I'm locating this as a bullet point below 7.6. That would then create space for the type of recommendations that Honorable Peter was coming in with. Now at your number 8, at another bullet in your number 8, so that there is some kind of correlation. Otherwise, Chair, it's well captured, the manner in which you have put it. Thanks.
Michael, do you want to say something?
I wanted to say on the recommendations, Chairperson, on the issue of the public sector, which be maybe we can add what Honorable Peter is saying, that this comprehensive study of the wage bill, it should be a joint study between the Ministry of Labour and Employment and the National Treasury. And the basis of that point is that when you read the MTPBS document, you better sense that the Minister of Finance is concerned about the wage bill. But we, as a committee, as a support staff, we feel that when you look at point number 8.2, which is the recommendation that we can only add the department, the Minister of Labour and Employment, as Honorable Peter has suggested. And then we also add that this, we should look at the wider economic impact, as you are suggesting, because National Treasury is concerned about the public sector wage bill, but we don't know what informs their concern. To say, did they have a study that they can use as a basis to say we're concerned about this? That's why we're proposing 8.2. I'm saying we can add what Honorable Peter has said. The Ministry of National Treasury and the Ministry of Labour and Employment should do this thing, so that when people are saying they are concerned, they are based on empirical evidence, not on theories.
Yeah, that's fine. But you should, I agree. I think that's why the points that we're having, I want us to add, because again, we shouldn't be understood to be saying we're satisfied with how the wage bill is, right? Wherever the Fed comes from and so on, the Minister of Finance has already announced in his MTPS some of the actions that they are taking from national government. So I think we shouldn't come across as if we're saying no, there's nothing wrong about. But all that we are saying that we are urging these departments to proceed and give us more other information so that we have what Honorable Peters and yourself are talking about. Okay, thank you. I think Honorable Sheikh, welcome.
Thank you, sir.
We are busy with the MTPBS report. We are on page 34. If there's anything that you would like to raise before, please feel free to do that. Okay. So on page 34, I think that was a welcome a discussion. And then let's go to page 36. 36. Honorable Peters.
7.7. There's
7.17.
It says it speaks to the HIV pandemic, and it speaks up especially amongst young people. But there was a statistics given, and I thought it would be important for us to add something that shows that the young people of this age to this age, this is what we are seeing now. It was something like the age 14 to 24, 25. And then there's the issue of the committee strongly feels strongly.
Yeah.
Yes. One of the strongly must go, even if we feel strongly. And then and then under religious leaders, is it not usually coined as faith-based organizations? Or are we just targeting religious leaders?
Let's be politically correct, faith-based organizations.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Sheikh.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, allow me to apologize for my late coming. In fact, I think I misread. I thought that we were starting at 10 o'clock in Parliament today, but there was no committee meeting. Mm-hmm. But let me apologize. Chair, I just thought that I know in one aspect here we're talking about value for money, and I think in 7.9, I don't know if we should be emphasizing on the need to ensure that at all levels of government, given the fact that we are losing a lot of money because of supply chain processes where there's no standardization of prices, should we not, you know, call on supply chain to put in measures so that there's some way of measuring that items costed in one province is equal, similar to another province? So, because it's estimated, remember, Chair, that we are losing over 200 billion rand a year.
Yeah. Just hold on to that, Honourable Sheikh. When it comes to recommendations part, I think that's where we should put that one in. Okay. Just try to draft it properly how we want it to be captured under recommendations. One page 36. Did I miss?
No, thanks, Chair. We've made some small technical inputs here on point number 7.16, the deadline. As this raised serious questions about government's readiness, the corrected readiness, the spelling. And when you go down, 7.18, there was a small technical error there. Was the first line, was the committee notes the reasons from government about the need to reduce the, we've made a correction there. It's head and all. Any public sector needs to pay attention.
Page 37. 37. Honourable Peters, and then Honourable Denzan.
At the level of the recommendation,
where are we?
8.1. It says to this end, 8.1, to this end, the committee recommends that Parliament should commence, not comment, should commence this.
8.1.
Yeah, 8.1. And 8.2, National Treasury should, or to, there should be some.
Should conduct.
Should. Yeah. And then determine, and municipalities, in order to determine the exact impact. Of the aggregate wages in government.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Chair 7.20. 7.20.
Committee. Right. Not committee.
Yeah.
And of course consent.
Honourable Sheikh.
Yeah. Sorry. So yeah, I think the fourth line from the top on page 37. These plans will never work. Rather, the committee is of the view that focus should more. Focus should more. I think it's a word.
Should be more.
Focus should be more. Yeah. On making focus. Yeah.
Be there.
Okay.
Honourable Joseph.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to 8.1, where we say Parliament should consider developing a government guarantee oversight model. I just want clarity what we say if we say Parliament, because is it a committee in Parliament or a structure of Parliament, or who do we define then as Parliament? Who's going to do it if we make such a recommendation to develop this government guarantee oversight model? And then I want to just get clarity on 8.2 about National Treasury that should conduct this comprehensive study on public sector wages bill. My question is, my view should be, by now National Treasury should be in a position to share with us information on the impact of what the public sector wage bill is all about, or whatever we want to know. Because if you read further, on the next page, it then indicates to consider wider implication of reducing the public service on tax revenue, and then there's the unemployment and skills leakage. I'm not sure what skills leakage is. And then the next line, must report before the 2020, so that means in a year's time, am I right, in a year's time. So, yeah, just clarity on a few of these points, Chairperson. Thank you.
I think where we are, National Treasury will tell you about the impact of the wage bill on the debt levels. But what is being called here is that it's the wider implications to the economy, right? They'll definitely tell you, and I think we can also say that about 35 rand in the other plan is used for wage bills, and it's excessive. But then saying, let's also understand exactly the bigger impact, right? Of that in the economy, even of reducing that. We should also understand that if we do that, that's what's going to happen. I think that's what you're calling a more study on the impact of the wage bill. Honourable Sheikh.
Yeah, sorry, Chair. I think we must also be mindful of what the Minister said recently in terms of the wage bill, that it is not necessarily that the numbers that are big, but it is the increases and things that were given over a period of time, and the salaries that are paid, the amounts, is where what is causing a serious challenge.
I agree. I think that's definitely what he said. And the question of retrenchment, I think government have not been saying that they are retrenching. They've been talking about natural attrition, which they say has not been working. And then they focus on the fact. I think that should be looked into, and let's be scientific about it. I think that's all that we are calling for. Now, Honourable Sheikh, there was a point that you wanted, and I said let it come on the recommendations.
Yeah. I just want to know before I go there.
Excuse me. Yeah. I've never been like this. You were too fast for me. I want to be honest.
Honourable Sheikh?
You left me listening.
It's fine. Please, yeah, your mic off. Honourable
Nizan? I was saying, I've never been like this before. You you left me listening while still, I thought you are not done. I can't conceptualize your last input.
Let me see. I was saying, that's what I think you're asking, that National Treasury knows what exactly the impact of the wage bill is on debt. That's one. Two, as government, generally we've not been saying that we're going to retrench. And I think it's a motion that we also support. You remember there was an initiative of trying to get early retirement and so on voluntarily, which has not been very successful. But again, there's also a point of natural attrition as people leave the private sector. So again, that talks to us saying that the jobs should be protected. The jobs should be protected. Then there's an issue of fact that Minister of Finance has spoken about. And he has started to be executive, if you were to look into that. So those are the areas which we always say that usually these things, while it becomes the blue-collar workers that Peter was talking about, in many instances, who gets the brand, but the people where there's fat is usually on the top echelon. So for government to continue looking at that, what can be done? I think all of us are saying a start of that, and then see exactly what can be done at the level. It enriches our debates and our decisions. I think that's what I heard us calling for. I don't know whether is that what we're referring to? And please, if there is something that you want to take an issue with, please do so.
Thanks, Chair. Perhaps I was correct when I said you left me hanging. Let me suggest to conclude your input by saying all that being done whilst we are mindful of avoiding compromising service delivery.
That's agreed. That's agreed, because we would like to hear people say no, people were not arrested in Khayelitsha because police have been retrenched. Honourable Sheikh?
Yeah.
Honourable Chavez?
Thank you, Chair. I think the last paragraph, 8.2 on page 37, I'm not sure, I still just need to get a response on that first point, 8.1, that Parliament should consider developing. Just want clarity, what is the meaning? What do we mean if we say Parliament must do it? And then if we read 8.2 and we say a comprehensive study on public sector wage bill at all levels of government. Now, what does all levels mean? Does it mean from entry level to the highest person, or does it mean
No. It means national, provincial, and local.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think thank you for that clarity. But then we need to listen to what people have said to us, our stakeholders, about the 29,000 senior staff levels of government, where the money goes to, that portion of the wage bill. It must be addressed at the 29,000 or 30,000 top senior management people in government.
I agree. That's why I was saying is that because it will come with all that and give that responsibility to government, right? Stakeholders have raised that issue, so we should be seen to be following up. They can even come up with those types of findings that some of our stakeholders have come up with. So we're in sync, Honourable Sheikh.
Yes, Chair, that last paragraph, I think the wording needs to be corrected. I'm not sure if you all did that already. State-owned companies and municipalities in order to determine the exact off-aggregate wages.
That's
the impact. You have corrected that, okay.
On the guarantees, What are we saying? one of parliament is parliament. The parliament can decide which committee deals with it, but at the end of the day, it's parliament. But what are we saying? Because National Treasurer goes to the Standing Committee on Finance, and they report about all these things. What are we saying? Are we worried about the state guarantees? If that's what we are saying, let's say that the state guarantees perhaps are being misused or abused and so on, because they do report, and they can also report to us if we raise an issue. But they do report on the Standing Committee on Finance on the guarantees, and you can raise anything about the guarantees which are there. So, but what do we exactly want to say? Are we raising an issue that perhaps they are being abused? If that's what we want to say, or want to say there should be clear conditions of giving guarantees, because I don't think they are there. Sometimes you hear the minister saying they are going to give you guarantees and so on, and also call for transparency as far as those guarantees are concerned. What are the conditions? Perhaps what we want to say is that there should be conditions of giving guarantees to SOCs, and those conditions should be known to everybody. Whether they report to parliament, which is through these committees of parliament, if that's what we want to say. I think the gist of it is that we don't know the conditions of the guarantees and who gets the guarantees under what conditions. Honourable Sheikh.
Yeah, Chair, I think the issue here is the lack of oversight on guarantees that are given. But I wish at some stage maybe we should stop these issues of guarantees and things. I think state-owned entities must be run like businesses, Chair, and I think we should give them rather loans. You know, and then they'll be more accountable, because they know that they are borrowing those monies. Because giving them guarantees is the same thing like, you know, bailing them out. There's not much difference in it, because they don't seem to comply. And although we say we're putting in mechanisms, or we're giving it to them with conditions, they never seem to comply with those conditions. Yeah.
Honourable Linda.
Thanks, Chair. Perhaps, Chair, if we can go back to page 34, I'm not sure where Darren slots this one in, on the budget principles, where you have got the triple E principle. I think this concern should be captured at that level first, before we rush to recommendations. It should be an observation first. And yes, the lack of stringent measures. Of, because there we are actually talking the principle of triple E. Then we put it there, that particular, you know, paragraph 8.1 could then be left as it is. Because it would be talking to what you would have captured before. But then, Chair, I don't want us to get into another debate. We should be seen as Parliament, let me say, yeah, that must be correct, as Parliament, to be consistent. Remember, in the fourth administration, because, Honourable Whip, we could focus growth at the time. We even went to the extent of changing the terminology, moving from the state-owned enterprises to state-owned companies. Do you remember? Where we're trying to influence ourselves and let these be companies, because at that time we could see them running on their own. And then the introduction of the state guarantees, where then you would allow them to run on their own without loaning them per se, but giving them, because a guarantee, in simple terms, is just a question of assurance. This is not yours, but you can work within the limits so that if you fall short, then government will be able to come in. But now, we are now talking of the shrinking of the economy. Hence, we are now going back to the original terminology of the state-owned enterprise. They are now beginning more of our babies than before, Chair. And we have to be realistic. So putting in these stringent measures at this time just because of the broad macroeconomic climate shouldn't also be, you know, let's be considerate. We don't know what will be happening as we go forward. Hence, Chair, I feel that let's not be too hard on the SOEs, but let's put in concrete measures of observation. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, I don't think I want us to close this one because I think we all agree. Let me start by saying, Honourable Sheikh, I know some SOCs which got guarantees and they repaid their loan and they got out of those guarantees. So
yeah.
Right. So I think we still keep that one, right? And then the bill out to the recapitalization it's a higher level of guarantee, if I may call it that way. So why don't we leave, I think, the question of oversight as far as guarantees, that let's have a more stricter and consistent oversight responsibility of these guarantees, because they also pose a risk. They are called contingent liabilities. They do pose a risk to the economy, so you can't just leave them. Stories, no. But I think again the question of us knowing the conditions under which companies, these SOCs, are giving guarantees. I think even in reporting, when you say I'm giving you this guarantee, it shouldn't just be open ended. You may even want to say, by such and such a time, you must have turned the corner and repay the debt and get out of this guarantee, something like that. I think that's the thrust of what we're saying. Because the oversight responsibility, I don't think really we can put our finger on it. Can we leave it at that? Can we leave it at that? Mankakul.
I don't get you. If you are saying we're leaving it at that, you are saying as it is coined in 8.1, we just leave it at that because it has got some form of like implications, because so I want to see a guidance on it. If you are saying we leave it at that, because it might mean that we expect an action. That's what 8.1 is saying.
Yes, we do, because we want to play a better oversight. Otherwise, as things stand now, we just hear there's a guarantee, there's this and so on. We don't know under what circumstances. So we're doing that. The responsible committee, and I said in this case, the primary one is the Standing Committee on Finance, should be able to report to Parliament what is happening on guarantees on an ongoing basis. And it also puts the responsibility on National Treasury to come and report on this debt guarantee, on these guarantees.
Chairperson, I hear you. I take your point. But I also feel that we need to put a point around what National Treasury is doing. Because these entities, these guarantees, if you look at how they are being managed at the moment, it's like a spontaneous thing. People suddenly, tomorrow, they come and say, we're not going to pay salaries at the end of the month, or we're not going to be able to pay our debt at the end of the month, so we need money as an emergency. I don't know what National Treasury can do with these entities, so that these things are projected in time, so that Parliament doesn't just react on an overnight thing, because it talks to poor management and a lot of things. Poor planning. Why would we not know that in December we're going to pay people? As a result, it forces Parliament to react on these emergency things overnight, as if people didn't see what was coming.
We can't differ with you, so put it in good English then.
I was saying, Chair, in observation.
Fine, observe and resolve. Would have said, now you said we note, and then you say therefore the student body resolve. Okay.
Student body did
matter. Would have said that. Okay. Okay, that's page 37. Any other thing on recommendation? I think I take on what Makakula is saying. not to have good warning signs. It always comes when it's a red sign, generally on a number of things. I don't know how we capture that, that we need to be proactive on some of these things as we play oversight, because for instance, let's take the question of, we'll get to it when we deal with the adjustment and appropriations. We only get to know now that money is not being spent, and when we must start shifting money, and that money gets shifted from the things that we think that they are very important. Why? What is the role of not just this committee? Because I think the portfolio committees too, they should be able to see these things coming, that money is not being spent there, and then they put in corrective measures rather than the solution being on the adjustment. The question being on the adjustment. That's not, that's a suboptimal correction, because the very fact that Parliament was had appropriated money to NHI, for instance, it was because the Department of Health came to Parliament and came to National Treasury. National Treasury believed them, and then they came to Parliament that we are going to need this money. But jiggy, 5 months down the line, they are just not able. So I'm just saying, let's coin something around giving, saying oversight responsibilities. People should be able to see these things. To see these things coming, they shouldn't just wait until the horses, the proverbial horses, has bolted. Honourable Kais and then Honourable Joseph.
Yeah, Chair, I agree with this proposal, but also because our oversight as a committee also cut across over 40 committees. I don't think there's anything that stops us not to determine a line. We can impose a line on all of these 40 committees, 40 departments, as to at what point the Treasury must intervene. There must be a clear, there can't be this situation, there can't be the same thing, story again in 2020 years, sitting here at this time complaining that these people have just now declared and spent monies towards December. No. We must stick and impose so that they understand that that's what we want to see, that we won't be able to debate this thing again from the Treasury and the and across all the 40 institution things.
Honourable Chavez, then Honourable Peter.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think what I've experienced thus far, Chairperson, that though we have all the good intentions, I'm sure the other committees, like Finance, also have good intentions, and SCOA and so on. So at some stage in the new year, we, three or four committees, state-owned entities that deal with these things, we must come together, and we must look at their recommendations, and we must look at our recommendations, and develop a set of solutions for these state-owned entities or departments that almost remain set in a crisis to crisis. So I would love to see that even like we're doing now with the NGOP working together, but if we also get all the three, four other departments in one room and find one set, common set of rules and guarantees and conditions that we all speak at different levels from time to time to move to a better situation, to avoid what the previous member say in time to come. Otherwise, I'm afraid if we're going to continue on this trend, this is going to happen. It's not going well in some departments and state of entities, and they're going to put us, Parliament, under pressure, keep us under pressure all the time. So I would call for cooperation, whether it's a workshop, doesn't have to be formal committees, but putting all the information that is relevant and critical together and get us in one room together, that we can speak from one voice going forward in dealing with these issues. Thank you.
So we should avoid a silo approach to these problems, find a way of coordinating our response as committees, even if we get into a workshop. Can that be captured somewhere, even if it should be captured in minutes and as something that we need to follow up on? Thank you. Honourable Sheikh and then Honourable Peter.
Thank you, Chair. Chair,
One of the problems that we found was that your quarterly reports, now you find that your first quarter report comes to you sometimes in the third quarter or towards the last quarter. By that time the damage is already done and you have very little time to deal with the issue. So I don't know, we need to look at some new mechanism. Even though they're going to be giving you quarterly reports, maybe they need to give us some form of reports on a monthly basis or bi-monthly, particularly those departments that have not performed previously or continuously underspend anything. But also one of the problems appears to be that there's really very little planning or strategic planning. These guys are, they come with these budget requirements shared, very misleading. They're not going to the ground, they're not consulting the people. The budget process with the public participation is not really taking place. And what they're doing is, if they needed 10 billion last year, this year they'll come and say they want 11 billion. And next year they want 12 billion. And that is why when the monies are appropriated, they're not able to spend the monies. So I think one of the problems we're having is that the strategic planning of the relevant department, right from the ground upwards, and also the issue of that quarterly reports that are coming to us at a time when it's very, very difficult to be able to deal with it.
Chairperson, my point is exactly what Honorable Sheikh Imam was talking about. The internally in the department, there is monthly reports which are signed off by the Director General to the Executing Authority and a National Treasury equally so. But Parliament comes in at the tail end, which would be after all these processes have been followed. You'd remember, Chairperson, when we started, we did raise one of the concerns that already at that time, we were getting the first quarter report of the previous financial year, and we were around mid-June. Yeah, we were in the second quarter already of the new financial year. And even if there isn't any intervention that you can make, it's a bit too late in the day. But also, you don't understand how the systems in the departments work, because it also just don't involve the departments. It involves equally the entities reporting to the departments. Because the line of, I think there's a level of malicious compliance. We have submitted the quarterly reports. Whether we do an analysis as the team on how we are spending, it's probably not here or there. Because the other thing that we need to also deal with, Chairperson, is the fact that departments are allowed to use the unspent money to give PMDS. So that is actually a perverse incentive.
PMDS?
Performance, can I give?
Management.
Yeah, the PM, the evaluation of the officials and the bonus. Let's call it bonus. Bonus in the departments. And I think...
Performance bonus.
Performance bonus. I think that is where the problem also lies. So we need a system that is a bit watertight, shorter periods in between, but also that allows for immediate intervention. Because we can also not sit and complain that we come to know late in the day when we do get these quarterly reports. We do get them, and we see the first quarter, we see the second quarter, we see the third quarter. So already at the level of the first quarter, you can see they are raising concerns about procurement processes, the inability to recruit a staff, or they're not getting the requisite whatevers and whatever. And I think it's at that level that we need to also intervene. You'd remember in one of the reports from Stats SA, we were given an indication that they are going to overspend with about 50 million because they said in the previous year they have budget for compensation of employees were cut and they still need those particular skills. So they were going to ensure that they go ahead and employ people irrespective of whether they do have the resources. It already tells you that if they can go ahead and employ in the previous year,
that led to the cut, they did not employ. What is now new? That maybe you remember the Department of Women. Equally, we've got these challenges with women issues here. They don't have the capacity, but still they don't even employ. They lose money. The next thing, it is issues related to gender-based violence. The women's programs are focused on women, and protection of women is not being covered. So I think there is just something that is not gelling. But I think the issue is the time-year submission of the quarterly report and the intervention that can be made at that particular time. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I allowed the discussions on the issues, and obviously as we reflect on the report, these things are bound to come. You remember we then put aside Thursday. Can you know some of these things? For instance, the things that are coming up about us meeting and so on, where we'll be seeing our experience in this term, and then I think that's going to help us as we try to plan for the following year. Now I would like to redirect ourselves back to the report. Samisa?
No, thanks, Chair. Just some input on a slide on page 37, Chair. Point number 7, point 23, that's recommendation on the state-owned entities. I think, Chair, point 7.23, maybe we can do away with it, because when I read it together with the point above point 7.22, I think it is covered, because point 7.22 talks about the committee being concerned about serious fiscal risk posed by state-owned entities. And when you look at the following point 23, it actually details those fiscal risks. So I think the first point, it covers everything. We can do away with the second one.
Yeah. Let's leave it. Let's say it over. It does no harm. It overemphasizes the point. I hear, because all the other things below, there are fiscal risks in any case. But let's leave them. Let's re-emphasize the point.
I want to propose that we add on the recommendation that National Treasury, they do have the monthly reports on the early warning system, so that if we have to be effective, we should not wait for a Section 32 report. National Treasury should provide us with the monthly report so that we intervene when we still can. So I want us to put a point there on the recommendations that will compel National Treasury to give us the early warning system support.
Derry, you're allowed to speak.
Chairperson, regarding CFISO's submission, there's also the Adjustments Appropriation Bill report that we are going to consider, and this discussion is more relevant on that side. It's not relevant to the MTPPS.
Okay, let's keep this. No, don't lose the point. I think it's valid. Honorable Zembo, may Vanda match.
Chair, Ababa Fana Bafundile, if they could include a paragraph, just a few sentences, one or two, on the reduction of the debt GDP ratio in our recommendation. We must say something about that. We have discussed it not. The way we help them to smart it.
You know what, for instance, if you take I think what we agree that the debt GDP ratio should be managed and reduced. But we said both ways, by concentrating on both things, not just on one, both economic growth, which also calls on private sector to also do something. We understand? Sure. Honourable members, obviously there's a lot of discussion which has taken place, and as I said, that some of the things that we are discussing, and the things that we must pick up, please, I think what we're also addressing, how do we make ourselves more effective in what we're doing, and how do we make Parliament more effective in its oversight role, rather than these things coming late and so on, and just we're also seen as just ticking the boxes. So I would like to invite the honourable members that on Thursday, remember that we've got a few hours on Thursday, let's also dedicate some time to that, to say the question is, how do we make our work more effective in that of Parliament? If we should try and answer that question. That was about the MTPBS report, and there are some additions that we've made. Can I on the members? Sorry, Secretariat, please effect those changes. And can we adopt the report with the recommended additions and adjustments? Honourable Sheikh?
Sorry, Chair, that recommendation that I made, is that going to be part of it?
It must.
Okay.
Just repeat so that we make sure that it's captured, because I thought...
I was thinking online that National Treasury in conjunction with other relevant department structures ensure that mechanisms are put in place to ensure that that particularly on goods and services, value for money is obtained, including prevention of overpricing. That's where the problem seems to be.
Got it? No. You must find it. You get the trust.
Yeah.
The trust of the honourable members' input.
I can give an example.
I get the point, but National Treasury, they do have this system of the procurement system, which is
it's not saving. We still get this thing. I think let's stress that so that when we ask them, we'll say in the report, that's what you said. How have you responded to this? Madam National Treasurer, you get the point. The committee is worried that we are overpaying for everything, and that's a fact, we are overpaying. So we are saying that National Treasurer should have a mechanism of trying to control those things. Honourable Sheikh?
While National Treasury, I'll just give a quick example, Chair. Recently in Jozini, there was a contract, and I've mentioned this before. Contract was given to A gave it to B gave it to C gave it to D. D did the job and he got 500,000, but the A contract was given to A 2 million rand for the job. So A shared with B, shared with C, and paid D 500,000. So can you see what it meant? That we lost 1.5 million rand on that contract because it was only worth 500,000. And that is the norm throughout the departments.
They get the contract and send it.
Sorry, a good example is the ministers mentioned that as well to us, that the price of the bottle of water in
SA, it's
right here by us.
So next time when we ask National Treasury, what have you done about this, would like, especially with the CTO, would like to get an answer. Thank you. Honourable members, can we have a mover for the adoption of the MTPS report? Honourable Sheikh? Honourable Nezana? Seconded? The report of MTPS is adopted. Thank you very much. Can we, Darren was saying, there are a lot of things that we have discussed which also belong to the to the adjustment of appropriations bill. Okay, then we will go. I'm going to be quicker now with the appropriations. A person who moved for the adoption was Honorable Sheikh, and Honorable Lenzana seconded. So they took a little bit of a detour, then they are back now. Okay, thank you.
I'm sitting here asking myself, we adopt the report before we adopt the minutes.
It's okay. It's okay. And then the next thing is the draft report on 2019 adjustment appropriation bills. But before we get into it, can I give honourable members a 10 minutes comfort break and then stretch and then we'll come back.
Thank you. Bye, thank you.
Thank you.